welcome to a new episode of Boutique Digital Marketing, the show that tells you everything you need to know about business and digital marketing. I'm Rita Saikali, and in today's episode, we are talking about whether or not you should invest in a franchise. We're also going to be talking about what is a customer journey. And finally, we have an amazing guest who is Augusto Valverde from Global Child. Stay tuned. Start off today's show by answering the question, should you invest in a franchise? And that is a very big question. So, before we do that, let's first begin by answering the most basic question, what is a franchise? I know you've heard of it, you've seen them everywhere, but what really is a franchise? A franchise is a type of business where a company supplies a product or a service along with the trademark of that company to others who will open and operate the business under the given name. So if you are buying a Subway, then you're buying a Subway franchise and you'd have to pay them the fees, and Subway is supplying you with the product or services and the trademark that they have. This company is called a franchisor. And the person that's looking to invest in the franchise is called a franchisee. The franchisee pays an initial fee to the franchisor, along with royalty fees that would allow them to engage in business using the name of the franchisor. Once that is done, the franchisor will not only give the franchisee permission to use the name, but also an entire system of operation. So this would include sections like operation manuals, like what products they should be selecting, the trainings that they have, quality control, and marketing strategies. In this episode, we're going to talk about three things. We're going to talk about the system and the support of a franchise. We are going to talk about the contract, and we're going to talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of opening a franchise. So let's begin with the systems and support. Possibly the most important aspect of a franchise is that it is a part of a system that is equipped with the resources necessary to operate a business. Yet, it comes with the independence and responsibility of maintaining and increasing day-to-day operations. However, you guys, not all franchise systems are the same. Some provide more supports and structures than others would have, right? So for that reason, when trying to select a franchise to invest in, it's important to evaluate it properly. According to the International Franchise Association, there are a few of the common services that a franchise should have. So if you are trying to evaluate a franchise, these are the things you should be looking for. A recognized brand name, obviously, right? You want people to know your brand. Site selection and site development assistant. Does that company provide you with resources to help you select the best site and help you develop that site for it to look according to their standards? Training for you and your management team. You want research and development on new product and services, headquarters and field support, and initial and continuing marketing and advertising. You don't just want to buy the name. You want to make sure that with that name, there's still marketing for it so that your business is constantly going, that you have support, that you have the people who are doing R&D, research and development, and so that you want to make sure that your company is constantly growing and you don't have to worry about these things. So one thing to keep in mind is that a good franchisor will periodically maintain the structure, the structured system, so that it's always set to the highest standard possible. The reason being is that to the consumer, the store is not viewed as an isolated store owned by an individual. It is considered one of the group. So a great service is reflected on the entire group, and so is a bad service. It's also reflected on the group. So high standards across the boards are needed to make sure that your store is not being discredited due to other owners and other locations. The brand is among the most important things. As we said, it was one of the lists, but it is also one of the leading factors in prices. So yes, you want the best name out there, but these also come with expenses. So Entrepreneur for the past 41 years has conducted this research or survey that has the top 500 breaking franchises in the country. And I'm just going to tell you the first six. Number one is Dunkin' Donuts. Number two is Taco Bell. Number three is McDonald's. Four is Sonic Drive-In. Five, the UPS store. And six is Ace Hardware. And these, they range within like the UPS, for example, the price ranges between 138K to 470K, whereas you got McDonald's and it's 1.3 million to $2.2 million per store. So these rankings are based on costs and fees, size and growth, support, brand strength, and financial strength and stability. You can look at this list on the Entrepreneur website, and it's if you're seriously considering franchises, then this would be a place to start. Next up, we have contracts. So when entering into a contract with a franchisor, there are certain things that the franchisee needs to be aware of. An Entrepreneur article also mentions that there are five of the most important things that a franchisee should be aware of. That is, first and foremost, agreements are typically non-negotiable. That means that contracts are the same for anyone who's looking to open a franchise. Whether you're here or you're in Minnesota or you're in Idaho or you're in New York, it's the same idea or it's the same contract. And the reason being is that the best way to maximize benefit of the system put together by the franchisor. So this would be the best way to gain something out of it. It also ensures brand consistency and quality control across the board. Number two, we have if a franchisor is willing to negotiate, then it is a warning sign. A franchisor that's willing to negotiate their contract is a major, major red flag because it shows their lack of confidence. They should not even waver with one word. If you tell them, look, I want to change this one word, they should say no. Otherwise, you should be getting a red flag because it tells you that they're willing to negotiate and you don't want that. Because if they're willing to negotiate with you, then they're willing to negotiate with everybody, and that kind of takes away the standards that they have. Number three is agreements are unilateral, which means that they're written from the perspective of the franchisor and it's kind of to their benefit. And it's not just, it may seem that way, but that's not the case. So really, it also protects the investor because they're a future franchisee. So it will become to their benefit if they invest in this franchise. And this unwavering attitude comes in handy when the investor becomes a franchisor because they know that the company is protecting their business. Because you know that there isn't someone out there, maybe down the street from you, that's running their business completely differently than you are and maybe putting you out of business or jeopardizing your reputation. Then we have the franchise agreement has a lot of things that must be done. So franchise agreements contain a lot of rules and regulations. These rules and regulations show that what must be done in order to operate that business properly. That's why they're there. So they're added into this contract so that the importance is highlighted and so that new franchise location is geared towards success. If it's been working in the past, then it's going to work here as well. And this is how it should be done. That's basically what it says, and it says it right there in the agreement so that there aren't any misunderstandings later on. And lastly, we have the franchise agreement has a lot of things that cannot be done. So just like there are things that can be done, there are things that cannot and should not be done, and that those are also specified in the agreement. For example, you usually have the non-compete agreement, and that means that the franchisee would not take those trade secrets and tell them to someone or use them somewhere else. Now we have the advantages and disadvantages of such thing. We got advantages. Recognizable brand. The more the franchise is known, the better it is for your business. And then we have business assistance. Because franchises has a system set in place, the investor will not have to struggle through trials and error. This even includes things like equipment and supplies that should be bought and instructions on how to start a business. So they're there to help the new business owner, and that's something really good. And then lastly, in the advantages, we have profitability and financial assistance. So because these franchises are recognized brands, they usually bring in high profitability. They also facilitate the investor's ability to get loans for businesses because the lenders are really just aware that these businesses bring in high profitability, so they're more willing to lend. And here are some disadvantages of owning a franchise. We've got the first thing is creative control. If you're looking to buy a franchise, you don't have creative control, and that's something that you have to be aware of because everything is basically systemized, because everything is on point. And then we have fees. So apart from having to pay the initial fee for the franchise, right, as we said earlier, franchises are expected to pay a royalty from their revenue each month. And in some cases, they also have to pay for like an additional advertising fee. And these are something to keep in the back of your mind. So the profit is not solely yours. The profit goes to the parent company as well. And lastly, we have cost. As you saw on the Forbes list, or as we mentioned in the Forbes list, some of these franchises can be very costly. This cost primarily depends on the type of business, as they may also include facilities and equipment. So the cost ranges, and that's something to keep in mind as well. Next up in our next segment, we are talking about, or we are answering the question of what is a customer journey? Are answering today is what is a customer journey? So, you know that one time you were trying to decide between buying a Coca-Cola and buying a Pepsi? Well, whichever decision you landed on, there was something that led you to that decision. Small as it may have been, you had what is called a customer journey. So here's the thing. Before buying a product, a customer goes through a process of deciding whether or not they will buy the product, or decide on another product, or decide not to buy anything at all. Maybe instead of buying the Coke and the Pepsi, you ended up buying an iced tea. Or maybe you decided, no, forget it, I want to be healthier, so I'm not going to drink anything. So, this process could be as insignificant as deciding between the two types of soda, which really is a very low-risk decision, or it may be more risky, like when you're trying to buy a house, or maybe you're trying to buy a car. The choice between the sodas may take a second, right? You have the Pepsi, you have the Coke. It's very quick for you to decide. The choice between buying a house is probably longer than these few seconds. It may take months, it may even take years. So, what are we talking about today? Today we're going to talk about what is a customer journey. We are going to talk about the business-to-business customer journey process and how to create an effective customer journey. So let's answer the first question. What is a customer journey? To put it simply, a customer journey is the process that leads the customer's decision to buy a particular product. Generally speaking, customers look for a product because it solves a problem, or really it just contributes to a passion. In the example above, or in the example we just heard, the soda could be solving the problem of thirst, or they could be contributing to a desire of just wanting that tasty drink. After determining the problem or determining the desire they wish to contribute to, the customer then begins to seek out information to help guide their decision. In decisions like soda, the choice is really simple, and the process is really not that extensive. However, when you're trying to buy a house, there's a lot more informational gaps that need to be filled. So in this case, someone needs to fill that gap. It could be the realtor, or it could be the person actually doing some research and finding the prices of the house, finding how many bedrooms, and then going to contact the realtor, right? So if the customers are actively looking, then they'll be on the lookout for content relating to that product or service. Through digital marketing, businesses can place their content before these customers through targeted and tailored campaigns. These digital marketing campaigns are based on activity patterns of these individuals. And this includes what they search for on Google, what they search for on Bing, and the different sites that they will visit. To have a successful digital marketing campaign, it's important as a business owner to understand how your desired customer might evaluate the risks and the profits of buying your products. If you can anticipate and evaluate the risk and maybe the profits for the customer, then you can tailor your messaging to highlight and reinforce the benefits. The first step is being able to successfully do that is to consider the problem that your potential customers are having and figure out how your product or service actually addresses these particular problems. Not just problems in general, but the particular problem that they are having. For example, is your ideal customer in need of an upgrade? Is their contract running out? Is it their first time investing in a service like yours? Like, for example, we've all seen these major mobile companies ad where they're trying to tell you, oh, we have no contract. Well, who are they aiming these things towards? Someone who already has a contract, someone who may be struggling to renew their contract every year and they're annoyed by the process. So they understand exactly the problem of the particular customer set that they are trying to target. The type of questions you ask depend on your business. The idea here is that you take the time to identify your customers and their problems. A really helpful way you guys of doing this is by creating customer personas. So once you figure out, you know, kind of how your customer journey works, then create a customer persona and it will really filter out the details. So now we address what is a B2B customer journey, or rather a business-to-business customer journey. The overall customer journey is very, very similar to that of a B2C, which is business to consumer. However, in a B2B journey, there are more regulations. And honestly, depending on the size of the company, the business making the purchase could have certain procedures that they have to go through before making that purchase. So whatever their process is, it is likely that they have already made their way through the sales funnels before actually contacting your company. In fact, according to a Forbes article, 57% of these people who are seeking to buy from you have already done this research before contacting your sales representative. So regardless of the way they actually end up buying from you, their customer journey, you got to keep in mind that 57% of them have already done their research before contacting your sales representative. And this is where having a digital marketing mission is very advantageous. Most of the research done today is done online. There's no question about that. You do it, your neighbor does it, everybody, almost everyone in the world who has access to the internet does their research online. So the first step in anticipating the buyer's journey is to realize that a B2B is done online. That means that your website has to be as optimized as possible in a way that is tailored to your desired customer's needs. Shopify suggests 4 solutions that will help you tailor your B2B customer journey. And these are these 4: educational content, quality site search, a presence that goes beyond your website, and email marketing to strengthen your relationship. This is educational content. Because 57% of the buyers have already done most of the research before they contact your particular company, it's important to provide content that will fuel that research. This is done through educational content. The question is, are you providing your potential customers with the necessary information for them to take the step of contacting you? So if they're searching online, do they have enough information for them to say, okay, I can now contact them because I know this, this, and that? Like, for example, in the case of buying a house, I've looked up the prices, I've looked up how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, and was given all the information that I needed. And now it's time to contact someone. This would be an example of someone doing the research before contacting a sales representative. Number two, they have quality site search. The question here today is your website easy to search? You have to know how to answer that question. And if you don't, I've actually made another one of the previous episodes, which you will find on boutiquedigitalmarketing.com, is on SEO content and how you could use it to increase traffic to your website. So that will give you an actual explanation of how to do this. But really, you want to ask yourself, is my website easy to search? If it's not, if you are having trouble reaching your own content, then rest assured that your customer will not take the time to actually reach their content, or reach your content rather. Number three is a presence that goes beyond your website. So here's the thing. Your customer or your potential customer will not only look at your website, but they will also look at your online presence, all of it, right? Your digital footprint. They will look at your social media. They will examine the reviews that people have written. So you need to make sure that your online branding is always, always, always consistent, and that you give people a good enough reason to write a great review about you. Number four is email marketing to strengthen your relationship. You want to build a strong enough relationship with your current and potential client that they seek to be a part of your mailing list. I know we've all gotten those emails that are just absolutely ridiculous and you don't want to open them, I don't want to open them, and they kind of just clutter your space. But there are certain emails that you get that you're excited about and you're like, oh my gosh, they came out with something new, right? In the olden days, they would send out a new magazine, you'd subscribe to a new magazine and you'd be excited when it got here. So in this case, you want to give your potential clients something that is worth signing up for and worth the clutter in their mailbox. And honestly, this can be done by creating content that adds value into their lives. And create so much value that they will look forward to your email. That's essentially it. And these steps, honestly, you guys, could be taken through B2B marketing as well as B2C marketing. However, when we are dealing with B2B, it is more demanding and a lot of times it's usually a longer process than a B2C. So, what is an effective customer journey, or what makes up an effective customer journey? An article in the Harvard Business Review suggests that creating an effective customer journey is achieved by mastering the following skills. Pay attention, you guys. Number one, automation. Number two, proactive personalization. Number three, contextual interaction. And number four is innovation. So we got number one, automation. What's automation? Automation is using technology to digitalize the aspect of the journey that would have been done manually before. Let's say that your company offers car insurance to customers. You only accept checks or money order. The way you can use automation would be to set up a way for your customers to pay online, or set up a recurring payment system where the customer doesn't have to worry about remembering to make an actual payment. If, for example, let's say you own a restaurant, a good way to use automation would be through online ordering versus walking into the store or calling in. The reason mastering automation is so important, it's because it will facilitate the customer journey. Customers prefer processes that are easier. So having an easier process will lead customers towards your product or services versus that of your competitor. So if we look at the example of the restaurant one more time, we'll see that the person that's placing that order may quickly shift to the next restaurant who has it out of convenience. All right, so number two that the Harvard Business Review suggests is proactive personalization. In recent years, marketing has become extremely personalized. There are even ads on the streets that are personalized. For example, the billboard can detect age and gender of the person passing by and present it with an ad that is reflective of that data. So if I'm walking by and I'm a girl in my 20s and I look at that ad, it will be tailored to me. Maybe that it will give me something about makeup. And if the guy behind me walks by and he is young and he is also like in his 20s, then it might change to cars. So it's reflective of age and gender. And here we see how personalized ads have become. They are tailored particularly to that person. For a business that is engaging in digital marketing, the more detail that they have or they're able to collect, the more they're able to personalize the customer experience. Data alone, however, is not sufficient. There needs to be an accurate interpretation of that data and innovative ways of reaching the desired goal through what was being collected. For example, if I go to a makeup store, some of them I'm able to try on the lipstick without me actually trying on the lipstick. So I'll stand in front of this tablet or whatever it is, and the app will show me how that color would look on my lips. And that is very personalized, and it leads me to not touch that lipstick anymore. And it will show me if or not I actually want to make that purchase. The next category is innovation. Innovation is thinking outside the box. It is the ability to analyze the customer needs, their behavior, the data, and the like. And then after doing that, they're able to tailor them to that customer by using the best technology available. So here's an example of what innovation actually looks like. Delta Airlines knows that its customers are traveling, right? It's an airline, so it naturally knows that the customers that are investing into their business, they are travelers. So they looked at their behavior and they decided that they needed an app to become a travel management tool. They figured out that once people are getting off the plane, one of the quickest thing they do is order an Uber. So they created an app in which has that feature included into it. That meant that the people don't have to look at somewhere else. They don't have to open another app. They can just do it through the plane. And this app, let's say, they facilitate booking and boarding. They facilitate in-flight entertainment and everything that the passenger would need on that plane to get from point A to point Z based on the data that they have. So they looked at innovative ways to actually solve that problem. Here's the thing. The app might not have increased the sales at the moment since the person flying has already purchased the ticket, but it enhanced the customer experience in a way that would encourage them to fly with Delta Airline once more. And it might have inspired them to share that information with others. Lastly, we have contextual integration. So that is basically using the context of where the customer is in their journey to guide that customer to the next step that the company wants that person to take. This context could be based on their physical location or on their virtual location. So for example, Starwood Hotel app checks in the guest via the app basically and through the fingerprint verification or whatever else they use to unlock the phones. And it relies on the context of where the guest physically is to integrate technology into that experience. So as soon as the guest walks through the hotel for the first time, that app texts them their room number and checks them in. And so we see here that they were able to take the context and add it into the experience or the user experience that's there. Up next, you guys, we have our lovely interview with Augusto Valverde from Global Child, and he's going to tell us his amazing story. Stay tuned. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm super excited for my guest today. For one thing, I met him when I was 18, and I was just telling him that he had the coolest name I'd ever heard. And my guest today is Augusto Valverde, and he, since the day that I met him, he had this crazy idea of grabbing a camera and traveling around the world, and he did it. He actually did it by himself, and so came his show, Global Child. And so we're talking today about Global Child, which is a show that tells you how to travel and to travel with a purpose. Now, I'm really excited about him because not only he's an amazing guy, but he's also an entrepreneur, and he's a founder of a charity called Big Foundation. And Michael Mann Augusto has his show on Amazon Prime and on airlines all over the world. What's up, Augusto?
Hi, how are you? It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being here. You have no idea how excited I am. All right, Augusto, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I think you said some really nice things over there. So thanks for the plug. Yeah, I was born in Miami. I grew up in Mexico City. My family is mostly from Spain. So when people used to ask me, you know, where are you from? I just didn't want to give them the whole explanation. So I would just say to them, I'm a global child. And that's where the name comes from. And I used to be a television host for NBC. And then I launched my own production company. As you said, I started traveling with a lot of faith. I'm one of these, like, you know, modern Christian guys. So I just kind of felt it in my heart that I wanted to go travel. So everywhere I would go around the world, I would learn life lessons. I put it into a show format. And, you know, all my friends told me I was crazy and all the networks said no. I had to learn how to edit because I couldn't afford an editor. And I kept going. And after like a year and a half, we became the first travel show to launch on 10 major airlines that carry more than 500 million passengers a year. So that was great.
That's absolutely amazing. And by the way, I remember that. I remember when you started editing your episodes and then you would send them and they looked amazing. And it was just, it's an amazing, you know, a privilege to actually see God's work in your life and how you've grown as well. So tell me a little bit more about Global Child.
Yeah, so
what do people expect on it?
Well, what I realized is that there was one travel show I used to love, which was Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown. And he was this guy that used to travel around eating food. And sometimes, you know, it would be political and things like that, but he had something to say. And then I just realized that I think when we are in the creative space or even in the business space, it's important to know what we're trying to say. I think we have to be intentional and have a purpose with why we are doing the things that we are. So I just said, you know what? I want to bring added value to the destinations, to the people who see it. And that's it. So every place I would discover a life lesson, you know, like courage or generosity or perseverance or whatever it was. And I would just make sure that that theme was highlighted throughout the episode. And I had never seen a show that would actually do that, combining the travel with a life lesson.
Now, one thing that I noticed that you mentioned is added value. Throughout my show, we talk a lot about added value to the customer. And specifically this episode, we're talking about the customer journey and how when you're, you know, like you want people to subscribe to your channels because you want them to, you want to provide them with something. What's the one thing you can say or you're positive that your show provided people?
Hope.
Ooh, I like that one. Why hope?
Well, you know, because when they see somebody who is sharing faith, we don't impose it on people. It's not a religious show, but we do touch on faith. We do showcase the place, and we show connectivity between religions and races and skin colors and age groups and cultures. And I think that gives people hope that this world can be the place that deep down inside we all know that it should be, that it was meant to be, and that unfortunately has been lost to, a lot of it has been lost to greed and just different people, the powers that be. But I think through the show, I'm able to remind people that no matter what you believe or who you are or where you are part of one global family. So you are a global child, and that gives people hope.
I love it. So another thing that you mentioned earlier, you said after a year and a half, and typically I think if you look at businesses or startups, because I'm kind of looking at your show as a startup, you really started by yourself, you went around the world and you had your camera and so forth. And that's a very relatively short time for it to kick off, to say, to have it be on multiple airlines. How did you make that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, they say that necessity is a mother of invention. And back then at that moment, I used to have a television hosting gig and I learned production at NBC. So there, obviously, you have just different people doing different jobs, right? The editor, the sound guy, this and that. But, you know, fortunately, thanks to technology being what it is today, we're able to really, there's no excuse for not creating what you want. I think we all have excuses on why not to do that. And the people who make it, quote unquote, or make their dreams happen are the people who step out in faith. And as uncomfortable as it is, I'm sure for you, you know, I didn't know you had created a radio show. Like, actually, how long has this been going on?
January.
There you go. Yeah. So you did your YouTube tutorials. I'm sure some people taught you. And now here you are with your radio show.
That is very true.
What was it uncomfortable at the very beginning?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the thing is, the first time I actually did my first show, I sat and I recorded almost 50 episodes, different episodes, but I did them at the same time. And I didn't realize how many errors I was making till, you know, I started to actually progress. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have to go back and fix all these episodes.
Welcome to my world. I think for us creatives and self-starters and even just business entrepreneurs, like no matter, all startups are going to go through this learning curve, and it's always going to be uncomfortable. But on the other side of that, I think for us, as the shows began to improve, as those mistakes lessened, and I began to understand the capabilities that were within me and with the technology, I knew that I had something, because people actually enjoyed what they were watching. It's just, how do we get it in front of the right people? And for television specifically, I tried through the usual routes, which are agents and managers, and they were the ones doing the pitching for me. But that got us no response, because at the end of the day, as cool as the show was, it wasn't network quality, because I was doing it without any resources. And yet the soul was there, the originality was there, and it was I felt like it was unique. So I kept going. You know, I think for me, I kept praying a lot. I think no matter what you believe, sometimes there's this little voice inside of you that just tells you to keep going. And I heard it. I kept going. And so then one friend of mine told me that I should go to this television trade show called MIPCOM, which happens in Cannes in France. It happens once a year. So she said, you should go sell it yourself. I didn't know anything about the business except the basics. So I got an iPad I borrowed from a buddy. I put in like this trailer that I created to show people. I figured I had just an elevator pitch amount of time. And I bought this ticket to go. And it was super. It was like, I think, $1,500 to go. So it was an investment. And
yeah, it's expensive for a trip to Europe, by the way.
Yeah. No, yeah. And that's just a ticket to go, no? Plus going to Europe. But then when you buy the ticket, they give you access to the database of everybody who's attending that specific event. So I'm like, like I can write like CEO of, you know, CNN, like CEO, like I just everyone. So I literally created this text message, and it took me 3 days, and I sent 3,000 emails. And so I wrote every single person attending. I send them this reel. I tell them about my show, and I got a 1% response rate, but that got me 30 meetings. So I figured that's a start. And then I went to Cannes, and you know, it's like I felt lost in the crowd. I started approaching just like the random channels. I couldn't even get into like Disney's and like these places. They have like gatekeepers to the gatekeepers to keep people like me out. But eventually through those meetings, I did end up meeting this one Spanish company. And I travel a lot in Iberia, which is the biggest airplane company in Spain. And I said to them, I said, listen, I don't know how good my show is, but I travel in Iberia. And the one travel show they had was filmed like in the 1980s. It opens with a person playing saxophone. It's super cheesy. It's super cheesy. And I don't know how good my show is, but it's better than that one. And I said,
Good pitch.
Yes, it's true. And I said, listen, I said, if you take this to Iberia, they're going to trust you because you're Spanish, just like them. You're Spaniards. Spaniards trust Spaniards. It's like a thing. And I said, if they know that I exist, they'll put me on their airlines and then I'll give you the 30% for whatever deal was. And then, you know, that happened. Then we shook hands. They went. And then one day they called me a few weeks later and they said, Augusto, you know, congratulations. You were right. Iberia wants it, but they passed it around internally. And so does Delta, so does British Airways, so does Cathay Pacific, so does Royal Jordanian, so does Thai Airways, and so does Scandinavian Airlines, so does Thai Airways. Like it was just beautiful. And so they did a bulk buy and they got all of our 10 episodes and suddenly we were just on airplane systems all around the world.
That's magnificent. And one thing that I really noticed or that I want to highlight to people is that you took the initiative. And I think one of the biggest things that I see in business or business creation or startups is that people are afraid to take an initiative to say, okay, no, I'm going to venture out. What you did was step outside and you thought, okay, well, if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, then I tried. And I think that's beautiful. For you, it happened relatively shortly. And I think you had a lot of maturity with you as you went about these things as well. One story that I always like to share is I started making videos when I met you. When I was 18, I got the word with Rita. And I had been making videos and like interviews and whatever since I was in high school. And now I'm 27, and it took about 7 years for one of my videos to reach 20,000 views. It took me 7 years, and the reason but I kept it through was because of faith. And my thought was, of course, at that time I was just doing religious videos, and my thought was, if I could help one person, then I can, and then that's enough. Then I've done my job and it's worth producing that one video. And so I love that you ventured out. And for the people who are listening, it doesn't always take 1 year. It doesn't always take 7 years. The happy medium, I think, is usually 2 to 3 years in businesses. Of course, at that time, I was a kid. You know, when I started out, I really was a child. But I love the fact that you ventured out and you took the initiative. And how would you have felt if it failed? If those sending those 3,000 emails, how would you have felt?
I mean, the thing is, I have failed a bunch. And I think just to clarify to the audience, before that moment, I had been in LA for 6 years, you know, quote unquote, trying to make it, going to hundreds of auditions, getting rejected. When I landed the job at NBC as a TV host, I had been volunteering in prisons for over a year, once and twice a week in silence, never sharing it on social media, just serving people, like working. And I had no money. People were criticizing me. They called me a loser. They called me a failure. And like through my faith, I just believed like, hey, listen, if God is real and I'm doing all my best to help people some way, somehow, he's going to help me. And then one day, you know, I got this job with NBC. That was like a miracle. And I had this girlfriend I thought I was going to marry. And Global Child actually came about when after 7 months, they fired me from NBC and my girlfriend at the time broke up with me on back-to-back days. So... It was very difficult. And I was like shaking my fist at the sky. I'm like, why? And I felt like this little voice inside of me letting me know that it was okay. And I just want to tell people that sometimes crisis is actually an opportunity for growth, for reinvention. And you are never going to find your true purpose if you're not willing to go of that which is not. And I've discovered that every single human being has a purpose and nobody can fire you from your purpose. They can fire you from a job, like a TV channel can fire me, but I'm always going to be a communicator. A production company can fail, but I'm always here to inspire people, whether it's one or 1 million. So I think the most important thing for all of us and for the people who are listening is, what are you here to do? Like, there's one great book that I recommend that helped me. It's called The Purpose-Driven Life, and by Rick Warren. It's the best-selling paperback book in the history of planet Earth, so it must be good. So, and it's really great, because once you know what you're here to do, there might be different methods, there might be different formats, but you'll know your calling. And that's always going to keep you on track, because you're never going to let it go, no matter what happens.
Absolutely. One thing Mother Teresa used to say is, we can't all do great things, but we can do little things with great love. Mm-hmm. And I think when the purpose that you have, when you have that passion in you and you have that purpose within your soul, and you're like, and sometimes you don't even know what it is. You just know that I'm walking in a certain direction and I don't know where it will lead me. When you have that within your soul and you're passionate about it, then it will come to fruition. And I think you can do great things with love, essentially.
And what I will add to that is, like, I know that there's going to be people listening to us that have all kinds of faith, sometimes no different beliefs from mine. That's okay. But what I would always recommend people is that just to always ask for guidance. You know, I think there's a thing called free will. And a lot of times, you know, it's like, you know, if God is real, if he is there, he respects you. So like, if you don't want any help, if you never ask for any help, well, like, okay. But what if he is actually there? What do you have to lose? And I know for me, I used to be the number one club promoter in Miami. I was a mess, just cheating on girls, getting drunk all the time, watching naked people that I shouldn't be watching. And on the screen, mind you, just so
just to clarify. I love how you had to clarify.
Didn't come out. I was addicted to pornography. There you go. Okay, fine. So, and the thing is, one day I just realized, like, you know, this MD party lifestyle is, I was meant for more than this. And I got on my knees one day and I just said, by myself in my room, I said, God, if you're there, I know I was meant for more than this. Please show me what I'm here on earth to do. And I give you permission to direct my steps. And if you're out there, just please help me. And within 1 month, I had a national primetime TV show. And I'm like, okay, like, I guess this is the plan. And, obviously, that took me on an adventure and it hasn't been easy. But I really want to recommend to everybody that, you know, listen, spirituality is real. Not because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not real. Like, COVID is real. You don't see it, it can get you, right? Like the Wi-Fi, it empowers your computer. It's very real. You don't see it and yet you're listening to us through it. So, like, believe me, God is very real, even if sometimes you don't see him. So just ask, you have nothing to lose. And then just to kind of bring it back to the business side of things, of course, like, if it was easy, everybody would do it, you know, without risk, there's no reward. And the thing is, you only live once, right? Why not try?
It's worth it. It is absolutely worth trying. And I think you really did a fine job of explaining that. Obviously, you know how much I love God. And so I had a billion things to say as you're talking. And I'm really trying to restrain myself so that people could watch the other show when I actually have an interview with you on that. But what I see is that God kind of put you in this place, and he transformed your life. And he led you to Global Child. And through it, you did something. You did the big foundation. So it wasn't just about creating a business and, you know, making some profit or some money out of it. You did something bigger. Tell me about big.
Yes, I think the way the big foundation came about is I had a dream one day and I saw this logo. And it was just in the middle of a stadium. And there was 30,000 people dancing in my dream. Everybody was happy. And it's just like a little happy guy, like a happy person pointing up at the sky. And it's yellow and it's a very simple logo and it's very happy and it makes everybody happy. And then a friend of mine told me, he said, you know what? The next day he calls me, he says, we should try to create a nonprofit that has all world religions working together just to foster harmony and to help people in need. And I realized, you know, as I have a degree in theology, by the way, I used to be a college dropout. I was the worst student. But then once I reconnected to my faith in Christ, I went back to university. I graduated summa cum laude. And what I realized is that, you know, God wants us to get along with each other. You know, we're all his kids. And no parent or nobody wants to have a dysfunctional family. So I realize that unfortunately a lot of the powers that be have used religion to divide people instead of unite them. So I figured that the big foundation was going to be a charity that we were going to get my Muslim brothers and my Christian brothers and my Catholic brothers and my agnostic brothers and just
Catholics
all of us.
Catholics are Christians. I'm just going to point, just going to leave that one there. Just going to leave that one there. Carry on.
Yes. Just all of them. And also Jews and everybody, just everybody saying, look, we have slightly different beliefs or hugely different beliefs, whatever it is, but we all believe in God and we believe in loving people. So we're not going to argue about what makes us different. We're going to focus on what we have, which is the same. And we're going to help people because humans are humans and they need to be loved. So we created this nonprofit called Big Foundation. Big is large, obviously, but it also stands for believe in generosity, believe in greatness, believe in goodness, believe in God. And through it, we've been able to do a lot of charitable work. And then I just realized as Global Child grew and became a reality. At the beginning, season one, I didn't do a lot of charity. I try to spread hope and I spoke about, you know, the life lessons. I needed it. but once I didn't have to sleep on people's couches anymore to make the show, I was able to start actually tangibly giving back. And I think for most of season two, you know, we sponsored, for example, a leper colony in India. We gave food for 65 lepers to be able to eat for an entire year. So that's something because that changed the life, at least for that year, for those 65 people. And then our business partner took on that responsibility the following year. So they've been eating for over 2 years now because of that. Then we participated in bringing 40 volunteers to Kenya, and we provided medical assistance to a remote village called Rongo, which had never seen a Western doctor, and healing things from malaria to all kinds of diseases, bringing medicine. We saw 3,000 patients that were properly treated over a course of a week through the foundation, and just acts like that. So I think that's just the beginning. And the messaging has been fantastic because we're not dividing people, people who are of different faiths or maybe no faith, they're welcome to join us and just spread this messaging that, listen, God is love. We love people. That's it. Let's just help.
That's, you know, you always leave me speechless with the things that you keep on doing. And it's amazing. And I think, I personally think that every business should be investing in growing the community. Otherwise, you know, you're eating by yourself. You're hogging all the food.
I think there's also, so a lot of the universal principles that you see outside, it's like gravity, right? They're there. You can choose to abide by them or not, but they're there. So I believe in gravity. I don't believe in gravity. Okay, jump off the building and you'll see, right? Gravity's there. So generosity is also a spiritual principle. When you give, you receive. The more generous you are, the more peaceful you are, the more joyful you are, the better opportunities come your way. And so the smartest thing a human being can ever do is to be generous. It's called The Genius of Generosity. I actually wrote a chapter in a book I just wrote for a company called Simon Schuster. And we talk about the genius of generosity. And so I would recommend that whenever you start a business, whether it's small or large, if you grab a percentage of whatever you make and you earmark that for charitable causes, your business is going to be blessed. And it's best to start from the beginning. That way, when you're a multi-million dollar company, you're helping a ton of people around the world.
Exactly. Like, this is just, it's absolutely on point. And it's basically everything that's my philosophy and what I'm doing. And it's been my philosophy since I had my first job out of high school. And I really encourage people to do that. There's nothing like giving and receiving in the others. And you mentioned, you know, like giving and receiving. If people are listening on the station, which they normally are, there's a 12 o'clock prayer that I do, and it is actually St. Francis's prayer. I don't know if you know it. And it says, Master, grant that I may never seek so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, and to be loved as to love with all my soul. And in giving, that's when we receive. And it's very true. And I think your business and what you're doing has proved that. Is there anything else that you want to tell, like a final remark that you want to give our audience today?
Well, you know, I invite everybody to join us on the journey. They can find us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is globalchildtv altogether. It's the same. The website is globalchildtv.com. You can find out more about our charitable acts, my personal story, all the other episodes, and also on Amazon Prime, if you want to see the shows, Global Child, you just look for it. But I would leave one final, you know, remark. I would say that really, if the dream is something that you really see happening, then maybe you're not dreaming large enough. I think in order for God to really show his miracle power, you have to go for something that you know you cannot do by yourself. And how does it start? Just by taking a single step in that direction. Faith is like a motorcycle. Everybody has one, not everybody uses it. So one person can grab their little motorcycle and go all across the United States, across the Canada, go down to the tip of Argentina, see the world, live a life. And other people have the same motorcycle and it's always sitting in their car garage. And that was their choice. So I just hope that everybody has the wisdom to take the choice, to take a chance. Because listen, we're all leaving this planet. It's a fact. We might as well live a beautiful life and go for it. So go for your dreams, chase it. You have nothing to lose. And I'm with you. I'm praying for you. And I encourage you.
Absolutely beautiful. And it is. It's true. Honestly, you keep leaving me speechless, Augusto. I don't shut up, man. You know that. I talk a lot. And then you come here with your wisdom and you end my stories. It's beautiful. Thank you for doing that. So for anyone who was listening on today's show, if you have any questions on anything that you heard in this episode, feel free to call us at 909-333-5116, or you could email us at info@boutiquedigitalmarketing.com. I'm Rita Sid Colleen. I was so excited to be with you today, and I'm